All right. Good morning, you guys. All right. So this time I was ready. Last time I didn't. I was hoofing it over here to try to get on the stage before the sermon intro was over. So, man, it was good service last week. Jerry, it was great. Man, so great having Jerry back in the pulpit. Oh, that's true. Where's the pulpit? No, you use the pulpit. No, but man, so good to have Jerry back with us, and it was good to have that fellowship. I just wish I would have felt better. Oh, man, I was so sick last week, you guys. I had the flu, and I was miserable, and sitting in the back during worship, I couldn't even stand up. I'm just kind of like leaning to one side, feeling like I was going to die, and wanted to be fully engaged and enjoying the whole thing, but couldn't. Oh, yeah, sure. But anyway, no, I appreciate you guys. I know a lot of you were praying for me as I was trying to kick that flu. It was pretty nasty. I was down for a couple days. I actually went home after church and I just slept. Just felt like I slept forever. But it was actually, I guess my body needed that, you know. And I probably wasn't going to rest unless I was, you know, feeling that way. So, but we're back in our series. You got to hear the story last week. So now you know why we called it Cheesy Thanks, because when the candle gets to you and you're the very last one and everybody's taking all the good stuff, then you just have to be thankful for cheese. And again, sorry, Jesus, I know you're going to have to think of some other dairy product to be thankful for, I guess. I don't know how that's going to work. But yeah, so the whole idea behind this series, like we've mentioned the last couple weeks, is that we want to be thankful for the things that that are maybe don't seem like that big of a deal. Life is made up of the smaller things, and so we have way more of those to be thankful for than we do the big things. And so if we're always waiting for something big to happen for us to be grateful for, then the reality is we're probably going to be waiting a long time. And so really having a heart of gratitude means being thankful for all of those small things along the way, even cheese. And so there it is. That's the gratitude isn't just for the big moments. It's cultivated by noticing and appreciating the simple, cheesy blessings that fill our everyday lives. And I said a couple weeks ago, you know, these blessings may seem cheesy to us because we don't think anybody else is going to think it's a big deal or something worth noting. But honestly, if we can't appreciate and really be grateful for those small things in life, then we're never going to have that heart of gratitude that we want to have. So today's message is just enough cheddar. So, a little confession here. Last week's title, the original title was Gouda Times with Family and Friends. And even that was a little too cheesy for Jerry, I think. So, so he went with Thankful for Cheese. And we're actually grateful that you went with that message title instead. So we were trying to do some cheese puns with each of our titles. And so today, the cheddar obviously synonymous with money, right? Having provision. And so the tagline here for today's message, gratitude for what we have instead of discontentment over what we don't. Really, if we're going to be people that are grateful, we have to be able to appreciate what God has given us and not be the kind of people that are always looking over the fence at the yard next door, which is so easy to do. So gratitude doesn't come from having everything that we want. It comes from trusting that God has given us everything that we need. So wants and needs, those are two very different things, but sometimes in our hearts they can feel like the same thing. We want something bad enough, it starts to feel like a need. And sometimes it takes a circumstance to bring things into perspective. Sometimes it takes the voice of a friend. Sometimes it takes the Holy Spirit's nudging for us to recognize, hey, this is not actually a need, this is just a want. And it is something that I can do without. And so I think the key to recognizing that, and the first thing that I want to talk to you guys about today, is that we need to stop comparing our lives to other people's. Stop comparing your life to others. That's where we really get into trouble. We start seeing what everybody else is doing, what everybody else has, and all of a sudden we start feeling like we have less than we do. Or at least we don't have that one particular thing, but with whatever it is, we feel like what we do have is less valuable because we're missing that one thing that we want so bad. But comparison will slowly and surely kill you. The more you compare, the more miserable you become. Teddy Roosevelt once said this, comparison is the thief of joy. Comparison is the thief of joy. So when we're constantly comparing our lives to the other people around us, then we're actually robbing ourselves of the joy that we should have. Comparing what you have to someone else is always going to rob you of your happiness. You can't enjoy what God's given you if you're constantly comparing your life to the lives of others. And the thing is, it's so easy today with social media because everybody's got their best face forward. We talked a lot about that over the last several weeks when we were going through our series on idols and how it's really easy for us to see the life that someone else is living and say, oh, I wish that was me. You know, that could have been us, right? But someone else is getting to live the good life. Someone else is getting to enjoy the things that I've always wanted and that I've always needed. And if you're not able to find contentment and joy in what God is doing in your life right now, it begins to affect your relationship with Him. Those feelings begin to come between you and God. And so the intimacy that you once had with God is affected by this comparing of your life with somebody else. Paul tells us in 1 Timothy 6:6-8, yet true godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. After all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world, and we can't take anything with us when we leave. So if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. And so we see that our contentment is deeply tied to our trust in God. If we trust God, we're going to be content. We're going to find contentment. We become blind to what God's doing and to what He's given us when we don't trust Him in that way. So when we obsess over what others have, we stop seeing what God has already provided for us. Our eyes are on that other thing or that other life, and we can't see what's right in front of us. I know you guys have heard the expression FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. But have you ever heard the term food ordering FOMO or FOFOMO? Okay, I made that one up. But I have that. I have that. So I go to a restaurant and I have the menu. This is not me, by the way. I go to a restaurant, I have the menu in front of me, and I'm trying to decide what I'm going to eat. And I don't know if you do the same thing I do when I'm trying to order food. I imagine myself, in my mind, of course, enjoying whatever it is that I'm reading on the menu. So I'm just like imagining that plate coming to the table and the smell of it and the flavors, you know. And so I'm like, am I having a good time? Am I enjoying that? Okay, maybe I should order that. And I work my way down through the list and I realize that I'm actually having a good experience in my mind with every single item on the menu. And so I realize quickly that I can only order one thing, but I'm going to be missing out on that other. Does anybody else do this? Is it just me? I think about the other things I could. It's just me. It's just you. I think about the other stuff. And so I'm like, okay, finally I decide what I'm going to. My wife gets frustrated because the waitress will say, you know, are you ready to order? And I'm like, yeah, we're ready. You know, it comes to me and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have the, and then it kicks in again. FOFOMO, right? Kicks in again. I'm like, oh man, I don't know if I should get this because I don't want to miss out on this. And I start doing that thing. This is actually a real thing. It's called menu anxiety. I was reading about it in Business Insider. I don't always read Business Insider, but this article popped up and I thought, this is interesting. And it was talking about Gen Z, how they have a really hard time ordering things because they're afraid they're not really going to enjoy what they order and someone else is going to get something better than them. And I'm like, that's me. I have that. I have that fear of missing out when it comes to ordering something. And then when I get the meal, it's hard to enjoy it because I'm thinking about the meal that I'm missing out on. Or sometimes I'm eating the food and I'll ask Debbie, what did you get? You know, oh, I should have got that. Why didn't I get that? We both could have got that. You know, when reality, if we would have strategized better, we would have just, everybody could have ordered all the stuff that I wanted at the table and we would have been fine. We just passed the plates around. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but maybe I should. Maybe I'm not made for eating out. I don't know. But my point is this. You cannot enjoy what's sitting in front of you if you're too busy thinking I'm missing out on something else. You can't enjoy what it is that you have, what God has given you, what God has placed on the table in front of you, if you're constantly thinking about what someone else is eating, what someone else is enjoying. It literally robs you of that experience. James 1:17. We did a whole study in James. Whatever is good and perfect is a gift coming down to us from God our Father, who created all the lights in heaven. He never changes or casts a shifting shadow. And so, my friends, in recognizing that God is a good Father and that he gives good gifts, we find contentment and even joy in what he's given us, because our attention is on the gift giver and not on the gift that we're receiving. I know we've talked a lot about that, but the whole idea is that if we're going to have contentment and experience the kind of gratitude that God wants our hearts to be shaped with, we have to learn to appreciate what God has given us, because ultimately it is him that we find our contentment in, not in what he's given us. Max Lucado said it this way. He said, contentment comes not from what we have, but from whose we are. So it's not about the things that we have, but it's about who has given us those things, the person that we have a relationship with. I guess this microphone's going to do that this whole time. And that's why the psalmist says this in Psalms 16, 5 through 6. Lord, you alone are my portion and my cup. You make my lot secure. So the psalmist is recognizing that, God, you are literally the gift. You are literally the plate that's set before me. You were the meal. And when we recognize that God is our gift and it's not whatever it is that we have all our attention on, whatever it is that we want or we think that we desire, and we recognize that God, our Father, our good Father, is actually the gift that we've been given to enjoy, that changes our perspective. And so this week, when you're tempted to compare, remember whose you are and do something practical to put things in perspective. Let me give you this. Take inventory this week, not of what's missing, but of what's already good. Right? Write down 5 simple, cheesy blessings. It doesn't have to be 5. I just picked that number. It could be any number. But write those simple, cheesy blessings down and thank the good Father that gave them to you. It's a practical way to remind you that the attention's not on what you have, but on who is giving you that gift. Because guess what? Practice makes perfect. Well, maybe not perfect, but you get better at something the more you practice, right? The more you put it into practice, the better you get at that particular thing, which brings us to our next point, which is practice contentment till it sticks. Practice contentment till it sticks. Because it doesn't come naturally to us. It's not normal for us to feel content, to feel a calm and an ease with our life situation just the way it is. That doesn't come naturally to us. That's a gift that we get from God. And so in order for us to experience contentment, we need to practice contentment. We need to actually learn how to be content. So this is an unpopular hot take, but contentment is something you learn, not something you feel. It's something you learn. It's not something that you feel. Because if I just depend on my feelings, then I'm a prisoner of my own feelings, right? It's my own world. But it's something that I learn. See, we get confused with the word comfort, right? Comfort and contentment. We sometimes use those interchangeably, but they're not interchangeable in any way, because comfort is a feeling, but contentment is something that we learn to do. It's something that we put into practice. It takes an understanding of yourself and the difference between your needs and your wants. Look what Paul said in Philippians 4:11 through 13. He said, I've learned how to be content with whatever I have. I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I've learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little, for I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. Oh, wait a second. Isn't that verse about sports? Or weightlifting, you know, breaking your personal PR. I don't know. See what happens when we read verses out of context. And what's Paul talking about here when he says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me? Now, he's not talking about that job interview, you know. You can do it, right? God's with you. That's true, but that's not what this verse is talking about. It's talking about finding our contentment in Jesus, finding that he is everything that we need. And that we can move forward knowing that he satisfies us, that we are satisfied by him. Remember the story of the Israelites and the manna in the wilderness? So every day God is providing their needs, by giving them this bread-like substance that appears on the ground with the dew. And they go out and they gather it and they bake it and they make bread and they make all kinds of things with it. And it's a way for that God is meeting their needs and providing for them. But he gave them some rules, some ground rules, so to speak. He said, you can only collect an omer per person. That's about 2 dry quarts per person each morning. And then on the 6th day, you're going to collect twice as much because on the Sabbath, there's not going to be any manna on the ground. And so this sounds kind of odd, but God is actually teaching the people of Israel something. You might think he's just trying to teach them to follow rules, right? Maybe he's like, you got to get the recipe right. But that's not it. He's not trying to teach them how to follow rules. What he's teaching them and showing them is that they need to learn to be content. Look what it says in Exodus 16:4. It says, the people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. Just enough for that day. And what happened when they gathered more than they needed, or they tried to save over what they had gathered for the next day? It spoiled. Actually, 2 things happened. It's kind of strange. If they gathered too much, what they gathered that was extra would actually just disappear into thin air. And then what they had gathered, and they didn't use all of it, and they decided, oh, I'm just going to save a little back and use it for tomorrow, that would spoil. It would become worm-eaten. And so God was teaching them contentment and trust. He was teaching them that I'm the one who's providing for you. I've given you just what you need for this day. No more, no less. It was a lesson that they were learning. See what I mean? Contentment's not a feeling. It's something that you learn. It's something that you are trained to respond to. And that's why in Matthew 6:11, Jesus told his disciples to ask God to give us this day our daily bread. He didn't say our weekly bread, or give us the bread for the month, or just give us enough for the entire year. He's like, no, this is a daily thing, because you need to understand that God has given you exactly what you need for each day. And when he provides that for you, it's for that day alone. It's for that time. It's for that place where he is teaching you trust and contentment in him. It's about finding daily satisfaction in Jesus. They weren't asking for everything they wanted. They were asking God for what they needed for that particular day. Craig Rochelle said, contentment isn't having everything you want. It's trusting God with everything you have. And what you have is going to be just enough. Just enough cheddar, right? It's going to be exactly what you need for that moment, that space and time. So once again, it's something we put into practice. It's not something that we feel. And my friends, the more we practice contentment, the deeper our trust in God grows. The more we put this into practice, the more we trust God. When we find that God supplies our needs and that we can be content in that, our trust in God begins to deepen. So practically, what does it look like to practice contentment for you and for I? What does it look like? All right, I'm going to give you one. This week, when you start to feel that urge, like you really need something, pause and ask yourself, what is God teaching me about contentment right now? Use that urge or that desire to have something that you think might be a need. Maybe it's just a want, or maybe it really is a need, but it's not a need that God is meeting in this moment.
You've been pause, listening to a yourself, presentation of Remnant.
What is God?
For more information, visit us at
remnantchurchonline.com. Right, and as we put contentment in practice, something begins to grow out of our gratitude. And that's generosity. This brings us to our third point. We need to allow generosity to grow. So it starts as contentment, something that we practice, something that we learn. And then out of our gratefulness, our gratitude towards God for meeting our needs, we begin to become more generous people. The more content and grateful you are, the more generous you become. That's how it works. It's pretty incredible. You don't even know it's happening. All of a sudden, you begin to see the needs of others around you. You begin to recognize that somebody else is hurting, that somebody else needs something. And maybe God is going to use you to supply someone else's daily bread. Not saying every single day, right? But I'm saying maybe in that moment, God is going to be the one, God is going to use you to be the one that provides that need for someone. So, Paul knew this to be true. He told Timothy to communicate this to the people in his church in 1 Timothy 6:17-18. He says their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. Tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. See, it starts with trust in God and contentment with what he's given us, and then our gratitude grows into a generous spirit. When we trust God with what we have, we move from discontentment to generosity. I don't know where you're at today. I don't know if you're in a space of discontentment. If you look at your life or you look at the things around you and you're just like, I don't have what I need to make it. You feel that gap. Maybe that's the space that you find yourself in today. But what is God trying to communicate to you about learning to be content? And how can you be a generous person when you feel like you don't have everything you need for yourself? That's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. I want to share a story with you. In the early 2000s, after the Rwandan genocide, a group of missionaries visited a local church in Rwanda that was still rebuilding after all the devastation. And nearly everyone in this church had lost their family, their farms, their livelihood. Poverty was extreme. During the service, the pastor mentioned that the church was collecting an offering to help out a neighboring village that needed to restore or rebuild their well. So the missionaries are kind of looking at each other. They're like, man, these people have nothing. They have literally nothing. Why is this guy asking them to give to help out this neighboring village? What are they going to do? They almost felt bad for the people, but they kind of felt embarrassed for the pastor for even bringing it up. But then an elderly widow who had lost her family, her home, and her belongings slowly came forward, placed her only remaining possession, a small woven basket, into the offering. And when someone had asked her later why she gave it away, she responded, I still have breath. I still have God. That means I still have enough to give. How many of us don't want to give anything at all because we're just like, you know, yeah, I got needs. I got things that I need to do. And this is mine. Maybe later when God really blesses me, then I'm going to be able to help others. Then I'm going to be generous. That's not the right attitude. Her gratitude didn't come from abundance. That's not the place where gratitude is born. It came from trusting God. And her single act of generosity inspired the entire church. So after she gets her basket, other members stepped up with what little they had. A few eggs, a bundle of beans, a carved spoon, till finally they had collected enough resources to be able to afford to rebuild this well for the neighboring village. Her gratitude, even in that deep loss, was the thing that inspired an entire community. It refreshed this community and made them all grateful for what God had done. Proverbs 11:25 says, "A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed." So God actually uses our generosity, returns it upon ourselves, not maybe in the same way that we think. It's not like you give somebody something and God's going to give you that thing right back or more. But maybe whatever God is doing in you, I can guarantee you is going to be a greater blessing to you than what you were able to bless somebody else with. God is going to refresh you with the way that you refresh others. My friends, it doesn't have to be a big act of generosity to make a difference. Don't wait to be generous until you have something that you think is a worthy gift. It doesn't have to be something huge in order for it to make a big difference in the life of somebody else. It's like J.I. Packer said, a little love given faithfully becomes much in the hands of God. And we hear stories all the time. We read through the New Testament, you hear stories of Jesus taking something that's small and making something big out of it. Something that others would consider of little value, and then yet it becomes something that's able to provide for hundreds. And this is exactly what God does when we respond to what he's given us with generosity. When we allow our contentment and our deep trust that we have in him to spill over onto others in generosity. That's what happens. So how are you going to let generosity grow out of your gratitude this week? This is kind of like your homework assignment. Thanksgiving's approaching, and you know, I don't think that Thanksgiving should be the only time of year where people go out and do nice things for each other or people go out and, you know, provide food for one another. Because being grateful, having this attitude that is born out of contentment, but it's gratitude in our hearts, this should be something that we experience all the time. And so we should constantly be generous people. Not because we have a lot of stuff, but because we have a big God. We serve a big God. Okay, so here's your homework assignment. Find one small way this week to be generous with your time, your words, or your wallet. Let God use this act of gratitude to give someone else a glimpse of his goodness. Because the reality is this, when you bless somebody else, when you allow your gratitude to be shaped into generosity and you bless somebody else, guess who gets the credit for that? God gets the credit for that. I mean, people aren't going to stand up and be amazed if you give somebody a small gift, right? No one's going to be impressed by that. But God's going to get the glory because of the difference that you make in someone's life. So we learn to be content with what God's given us. We're not constantly looking at what other people have and wishing that we had more, but we're content with who has given us what we have. And then out of our contentedness, out of our gratitude that God is shaping in our hearts, our generosity starts to flow and we're able to bless others. Let's do it. Let's do it this Thanksgiving season. Would you bow in prayer with me? Father, thank you. Thank you, God, for, first of all, God, for being a good father who knows how to give good gifts, even if your people sometimes don't recognize that the gift you've given us is good. It's so easy for us to look at other people's gifts and say, why didn't you give me that, God? Why didn't you do that for me? But God, you have provided exactly what you want us to have. I pray, Father, that we would depend upon you for our daily bread, for exactly what we need, to trust you with what you've given us. And then, God, I pray that you would do something in our hearts, that because we find our contentment and our satisfaction in you, that in our hearts, you begin to build generosity. So that people start looking at our lives and saying, wow, I don't understand how those people can be so generous when it doesn't seem like they really have a lot of stuff. God, do that in our hearts so that you can get the glory. Maybe you're here today and there's something you struggle with. I mean, I admitted about my FOFOMO, right? Maybe there's something that you struggle with in this area. Maybe you have that habit of looking over the fence and just being like, man, I wish I had that. Or maybe you're struggling with what you do have and you're just like, God, are you even going to come through for me? Wherever you find yourself, ask God to give you contentment. Contentment is a beautiful gift from God, but it's something that he builds in us. It's something that takes a little bit of time. It's something that we have to put into practice in order for it to become a reality for us. So ask God to start helping you to put contentment into practice. And then, if you're brave enough, ask him to give you opportunities to be generous. Ask him to give you people whose needs that you can meet. And let's be his people by doing that. Father, help us to do that. If you need help with that today, if that's the thing that you're being challenged by, just lift up your hand. I'd love to pray for you today. Awesome. Anybody else? God, this is where it starts, with a willingness to learn contentment. Help us. For those that are saying, yes, that's me. This is something I need to work on, Father. Do a special work in their heart and in their lives. Even this week, give them an opportunity to begin to put these things into practice. Most of all, God, thank you for being a good Father. Thank you for loving us. I pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. I'll be in the back if anybody else needs prayer. Sound good? Awesome. Love you guys.
The following is a presentation of Remnant.
Hey, this is Jeremiah from Remnant Church. We want you to be encouraged and filled with hope through your experience as you listen in. This life can be complicated, even confusing, but it's our hope that you catch a glimpse of God's unconditional love for you and His purpose for your life. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jeremiah Vick.